I'm your host, Rena Friedman Watts, and this is the Better Call Daddy Show.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, Wayne Friedman.
That's my grandpa. Grandpa, you ready for more daddy drama?
My dad is my number one hero and number one fan.
And I'm a pretty cool dude.
All right, season four, baby, here we go.
More stories you're not going to believe.
And maybe you will after you listen.
5 stars.
5.5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
You are a pretty cool dude.
Love you, Mommy.
Don't stand on the table and damn the public. You'll get some words of wisdom to live by.
Here we go again. Better call Daddy.
You know what your problem is? You like me.
Yeah, I do. Each week, I interview a guest, share the stories with my dad, and then he weighs in at the end of every episode with his wisdom and wit.
Hey, Grandpa.
Everyone from influential players to inspirational fathers and, of course, controversial people.
Grandpa, my mom is calling.
Creating that legacy one call at a time. And welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Stay tuned.
Where's the music?
Better call Daddy because he knows you best. Better call Daddy because he's bringing the test. He sees possibilities. Better call Daddy, you're the apple of his eye. He sees possibilities. All to be.
Today's guest added to my dad's definition of the meaning of life.
And not only that, but can we really see a vision for the future?
We don't even know what we can't see. And what we do see is often a mirage. Hall of Famer podcaster Rob Greenlee is going to break it down for us. Rob, welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show. Let's talk about all the different ways in which we can put together a podcast. For instance, I interview guests, and then afterwards, I do my intro-outro. A lot of times, podcasters will just intro you, and then you know you're on.
Right, right. There's really no one way to do this. I think it's whatever you want to do is really the big thing. And a lot of creativity comes from that ability to just have an open mind about this stuff. So, yeah.
Speaking of open mind, you are doing a podcast right now about trust. And some of the topics I feel like that you're covering are a little edgy. What sparked that?
Well, it's really my experience in the world is what sparked that. I think that's one of the biggest issues of our society today is each one of us trying to determine where our borders are of our ability to trust our own instincts and trust the world around us. And that's the key takeaway is how do we manage that, you know, with the growth that we're seeing with artificial intelligence and how technology is progressing, this line between reality and fiction and artificial reality is going to challenge us in many ways to be able to filter through individually. So I think generally what we're going to see is people just generally not trusting anything. And then there's this filter that we're going to apply that's going to look for characteristics and do our own research to come up with our own conclusions about what we believe is what we individually can take in as what we can accept. It's a very complicated type of situation. I can see it even with my experience around medical care and all of the issues around that is, can you trust your doctor to give you good advice, or should you take everything he says with a grain of salt and apply your own reasoning and your own research and your own common sense to that because you know that there is maybe a financial incentive or an agenda that's being driven by some other entity or that person themselves. And it could be based on their lack of research into this topic. Because I've got into many appointments with my doctors where I ask them very probing questions and they just look at me with a puzzled look on their face. And it's like, this is freely available information online and from other people. And they've been talking about this stuff for years and in an area that you're supposed to have expertise in, and you know nothing about what I'm talking about. So that is a big red flag to me that there's a disconnect here. And that disconnect So really, at the end of the day, the responsibility for each individual life, our lives, is with us. We can't put our trust in really anything, governments, organizations, institutions. All we can do is put trust in things that our gut tells us that it's like a green light or a red light, right? Based on inputs and our own perceptions and our own knowledge about these topics and what makes sense to us. So it's a very complicated topic, and I've been really kind of, I'm not making as many episodes in this area as I would like to, but it's basically a topic that I'm going to continue to create episodes. It's just that they're going to be probably more of a non-regular basis. It's going to be a sporadic thing based on opportunities that I come across, and I'm starting to get some really good guests on the program that can kind of delve into this too, because I'm not the only one that's feeling this way and thinking this way. And increasingly, I think over the subsequent years here, I think it's going to become far more important than a lot of people realize. Because I tell people that I'm doing this show on trust, and they just get a puzzled look on their eye, because, you know, they don't understand why you would ever do a show on the topic of trust, because it is kind of a new idea, but it isn't a new feeling that we all have.
Well, there's so many different avenues that you can take with trust. Trust in yourself, like you mentioned, trust in relationships, trust in organizations, trust in the medical system, trust in the education system, right? There's a lot. Trust in the media.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things going on in the world that the internet and what's happened there. And I came out of this earlier span in my career as a podcaster and as a kind of radio show host, where I was exploring the growth and development of the World Wide Web and the internet. And so I was one of those early people in the media that was talking about the technology of what was coming, wireless internet and social platforms and social networks and stuff. And this was going back to the late 90s. And so my contribution to this, to some degree, has been kind of, I would say, promoting technology and promoting the internet. And as it's turned out, what I thought it was going to become has become so much different than what I had thought it was going to be. And I had no idea that it was going to be a negative thing in many people's lives. I looked at it through rose-colored glasses at the time, that the internet was going to bring people together and this kumbaya moment of access to information on a joint basis. But I didn't really think about the negative use of technology that could be used that could hurt people. And that's what we've seen.
So now you're thinking about it more ethically.
Yeah, I'm just trying to kind of pull it back and say, okay, now we've opened Pandora's box. So how do we cope with that? And I think that's kind of what's happened here. And I question this whole concept of, well, maybe this has been the world that we've been living in. We just didn't know that it exists because we were all isolated as individual humans and not interconnected. I mean, if you think about our mobile smartphones, they're basically enabling us to be almost like androids. We're a technology human hybrid. If you think about the mobile phone as our brain, I was listening to a video on YouTube last night from really an expert on the process of people dying. What is consciousness? This whole concept of, and we think about a mobile phone as an analogy to our human brain, right? Is it possible that the human brain is just like a smartphone and data comes to it through energy, right? Which is wireless communications, right? And it's kind of like saying that your human brain is like a television set. What you actually watch in the television set comes through energy from the environment. Well, is that how humans are connected to the world? Is through this kind of field of energy that we're surrounded by? If you look at what the world is comprised of, really, it's energy is really what everything around us is made of. And if we think about technology, technology is just a place to view the energy that we want to share with each other. And is that really any different than human existence? And so we're kind of coming into an era now where, is it possible that our consciousness is what's in the wireless ether out there? And it's not so much our consciousness is in a wet kind of biological brain, but maybe the brain is like an operating system that is connecting to this larger energy field, right? So I know I've taken you down a little bit of a rabbit hole, but it's a little bit of a revelation that I've had to some degree that, is that possible? And I'm increasingly thinking that it might be possible that that is a little bit of a explanation of our existence and how we all live, because there's increasing evidence that when a person passes away, their consciousness continues. And there's scientists out there, there's doctors that are like saying, yes, 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 that happens. I don't really 100% know how they know that for sure, but it's one of those things that really could just kind of challenges your view of your existence and your view of the world and how it might work. And it might work in a way that we haven't up till now really had an understanding of. And so, you know, I know that doesn't have a lot to do with trust, but that's a topic that I've been thinking about.
I think it does have something to do with trust, because are you trusting the environment in which you're in and the world in which you're in? And are you seeing the world in the same dimension as the people around you?
Yeah, and I think about this technological development that we're seeing happen with the AGI, that's basically artificial general intelligence. And in some ways, are we creating a new life form here? Or are we creating an entity that is more connected to the ether as a consciousness, right? It's not a biological kind of consciousness like we are, but it's more of a kind of a technological consciousness that maybe lives forever, right? It's not something that has a lifespan, where our frail human bodies wear out, just like our computers wear out or our televisions wear out, and we have to get a new one, right? Maybe that's the proper way of thinking about how the world is created around us, is that things are temporary because they're just vessels for the transmission of some sort of energy.
Do you create content and media because you want something that's going to live forever?
Well, I think that there is an aspect of that. And I did cover some of those topics back when I was doing my radio show and also with my new media show that I've done around archiving of digital information. Because up to this point, nothing digital has been permanent as far as in a storage, you know, like in a storage medium. Because, you know, in the early days, there was the floppy disks and there were CDs and there's DVDs and stuff like that. And all those mediums degrade over time and they become unusable. So nothing digital, as you think about it, is really permanent. And that's an interesting analogy, too, to life in general, too. So that means that everything will flow back into the energy field of sorts, ultimately, right? Will be created in this digital experience that we're doing right now. It's being recorded, but how long will that really last? How long will that be available for my ancestors 1,000 years from now to be able to see? And will they even have any interest in seeing it? It is a whole other level of a question, right? But there have been platforms that are out there. It's called the Wayback Machine. It's part of the Internet Archive that has been archiving digital information. If you were to go in there today, you could look at things that I did 20 years ago that aren't currently hosted on any live website, but are part of this data archive storage, right? So you think about that kind of stuff. And if we're going to see more of that, so let's say at some point the technological development here moves towards us being able to archive like maybe our human experiences or our brains. And really, if you draw this back to family, right, this is something, you know, I never got to meet my grandmother because she passed away when I was a very small child. It'd be wonderful if there was some way for me to go back and be able to experience her and be able to talk to her or in some sort of a conscious way that could be done electronically through the energy field that was created by her when she was in existence on this planet. But that doesn't mean that she doesn't exist potentially in the energy field out there. And that's part of what I was getting back to, too. So this does have a pullback to family, too, and family roots and how people kind of lose those relationships, whether it be a pet or a son or a daughter, or people pass away, there's accidents. You know, is there a way that we can still maintain those relationships in the afterlife? And is there an afterlife? And I think that's a big question that I think the human society will probably start to solve those questions.
That would be really cool. I also like the idea of tapping into their energy if they are still in our sphere.
Well, based on what I'm hearing, you know, that must be the case, that they are out there. There are some that believe that those entities exist in the energy ether out there, and that will potentially, and I don't understand how this might work, or even if it does work, but could be reconstituted into another physical being based on the energy field. I have no idea what would trigger that to happen, or if it ever does happen. But we're creating a set of kind of electrons in a storage medium right now that could be transmitted wirelessly. And it is. We're probably transmitting this through a light beam right now between you and me through fiber optics, which is basically a form of energy, which is basically light. So why couldn't, I mean, if everything around us is energy, you know, trees, buildings, it's just, it depends on the atoms that are composed of those things. And what we see through our eyes is such a limited spectrum of light. Maybe there's things that are in our world that we just can't physically see that are there. The explanations of this stuff is kind of crazy, but I'm open to it. I'm open to thinking about it and thinking that there might be some path here for us to have better vision. I know that for many years I was involved in wanting to be an astronomer. So I was very much focused on cosmology and light spectrum and things like that, and realized that I know scientists and astronomers have been using different forms of telescopes for many years. It could be X-ray telescopes, it could be ultraviolet telescopes, it could be all sorts of other spectrum of energy that humans just don't have any awareness of. So when I look at the screen with you, what I'm seeing and the colors that I'm seeing in there is colors that are reflected from light that's made available that my eye was evolved to see. The screen that I'm looking at right now is could be completely different, what's showed here, than what I think it is, because of our ability to perceive what's around us is based on, because there's all sorts of different animals in the world that see different things, right, than we see, like dogs, cats. I think many of us have thought that cats and dogs see in black and white or something like that. So you think about how we differ and how we see things can be wildly different. And what does that mean for the reality that we live in?
I love these questions, these possibilities. Yeah. It's funny, yesterday my son said, if aliens came to Earth, do you think that there would be war, or do you think that they would be developed and want to interact with us?
Well, I think it's even a much bigger question than that, is they may be here right now. We just can't see them because they are operating in a spectrum and a frequency range that is unviewable to us and undetected. If they have advanced technology, they could have the ability to create almost like a cloak, right, of not being able to be seen. Just to give you an example, if they emit energy around their existence that's maybe X-ray energy or ultraviolet, we won't even see them because we can't see that kind of light. So it's just one of those things that our U.S. government has come out saying, yeah, aliens are here and we've got dead bodies and we've got alien craft and all this stuff like that. The question gets back, can we believe that stuff? And why are they telling us when they really haven't wanted to tell us that since the 40s when really all this stuff started? But yeah, I guess this gets back to that same topic that I was talking about around trust, is you can really get a lot of anxiety in life, and all of us have enough to deal with in our own families and our own relationships and coping with all of the changes that are happening in the world. And it seems to be increasing faster and faster. And there's some scares out there. There's a lot of people scared about artificial intelligence right now and thinking that, oh, the AGI monster is going to kill us all and all stuff like that. And my pushback on that is maybe we don't want to put restrictions on AI, because maybe if humans have too much influence over AI, then it will kill us. If AI operates autonomously and independently of us, it might assess all the information in the world and come back with very positive and constructive solutions to the world problems, because it's super intelligent, right? It's only dumb people that make bad choices. So do we want to make a dumb AI, or do we want to make a smart AI? Is the question that I'm starting to ask myself, is that there's a danger of humans having too much influence over AI, because humans have dangerous tendencies.
Yes, they do. Actually, right. I like that you put a positive spin on that. My husband brought up, too, like his worry of AI taking all the jobs.
Yeah, I think it's a valid concern. But I also think that what we don't know is what jobs will be created that need to be accomplished by humans in tangent with AI. Because humans have skills that AI is going to be difficult for them to really do. And that's what's interesting about this, is that we think about AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, that would be more analogous to human intelligence, right? As general intelligence, which is really the ability to see and interact in the world, just like we do. My question for AI, if AI is going to have that ability, are they going to have the same limited spectrum of view of the world? If they have the full spectrum of view of the world and all of the various energy light sources, what kind of world are they going to see? They're going to see a world that's different than us. And that may be a better world for them to see than the limited things that we see. And why do we see the limited things that we see is the bigger question. Is there some survival mechanism in there that has limited our view? Because if we saw everything, we couldn't handle it. So it's a much bigger question.
I love the question, why do we see what we see?
Yeah. I mean, color is just a reflection of the spectrum of light that our eyes have been enabled to see. And that has happened somehow over the years. I'm not sure, you know, if you think about kind of the core functions of our human bodies and then combine that with what's happening with, let's say, a Tesla vehicle, which I own a Model 3, and it has 8 or 9 cameras around it. And Elon is coming out with a version of that that's going to be what I consider to be AGI technology. It's going to be a vehicle that drives itself based on vision. Guess what? That's what I do. I drive a car based on vision.
And how quickly can you take over if the vision on the AGI isn't good?
Well, that's probably not entirely the right question.
Okay.
Because based on my understanding of full self-driving version 12, which is when he's going to switch over to vision-based driving, is that there's no code in there.
Oh, okay.
Just like in our brain. Our brain doesn't have hard-written code in it to say, if you pull up to a stop sign, you stop. We learn that based on vision and training. Well, that's exactly what he's doing. He didn't tell the software or the code to stop at a stop sign. The artificial general intelligence learned that from watching videos. They saw in the videos, the AGI saw humans stopping at stop signs. And guess what? It said, well, that must be what I need to do. So that's the analogy here that really kind of pulls everything together for me, is our vision approach to our existence is really the core of general intelligence, right? I mean, we're navigating the world based on vision, but now we've created a machine that does the same thing. I mean, does that mean that we just created a new form of life, or does that mean that that's the next evolution of life?
I love these questions. I also want to know how you went from loving astronomy to getting your own radio show. There's some steps in between there. Can you give us a little of that?
Well, to be completely frank about it, I think the big thing that kind of pushed me away from becoming an astronomer was the two things, the economic opportunity of it, and which if you want to become an instructor at a university, that's great, but that's about the only job prospects that you have. And then two is I really didn't like math that much. So my skills didn't go down that path, you know, of calculus, and I just didn't have the interest in it. So I love the concept of understanding cosmology and how all the planets, and more from a functional standpoint, but not so much getting into the math of orbits and how all that, I mean, I couldn't see myself sitting around doing that kind of stuff. So I gravitated towards kind of more of a people business to some degree, but also still having a passion for science and a passion for, you know, just learning in general about the world. And that's what pulled me into doing a radio show on the internet and things like that. I've got a marketing degree is what I wound up getting. So I have a business and marketing degree. So that took me down that path of working for companies and around brand marketing. And actually, I started really, so I was in the grocery and restaurant industry is where I spent. I've owned my own restaurant for 5 years and also worked for like some of the largest food companies in the world. And then also have worked for a company called Microsoft too for 7 years. So that's when I got sucked into kind of the technology side of things.
You did tell me on our last call that you were more a marketing versus data person. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think it's just more what I gravitated towards when I was younger was being more of a marketing person. As I came out of school, I started working in the grocery industry and got involved in working in restaurants and things like that to some degree, and started to do some things with the internet, with my grocery marketing stuff. I used to work for the Florida Department of Citrus, and I was their field marketing manager up in the Northwest, which is up in the Seattle area, Oregon and Alaska and places like that, and Northern Canada, well, Western Canada. And I started using the web and technology in my marketing. So I built the world's largest glass of orange juice. It's in the Guinness Book World Records. I created the first Florida citrus website at floridajuice.com, which is still active. I think it's just floridacitrus.com now, I think is what they changed the domain to. But so I was using technology and kind of the cutting edge to do the marketing that I was doing. And I was putting together like campaigns for the Florida citrus industry on the juice as well as the fresh citrus side in the Seattle market. And it was like giving away sailboats and doing sampling in grocery stores and working with Costco and working with, you know, a lot of the big retailers and a lot of the big kind of juice brands too, like Tropicana and Florida's Natural and things like that. I would do campaigns to support all of them in that market. So I would buy radio, TV, billboards, sampling campaigns in stores and things like that to drive demand for orange juice. I have a different philosophy about orange juice now than I did back then. It's got too much sugar in it, so I stay away from it completely. So, but back then, the Cancer Society and the March of Dimes and whatever had tight partnerships with those folks. I was doing kind of support promotional campaigns and marketing campaigns back then. And that's kind of how I got into the food business to some degree, was doing that type of work on the marketing side, and then wound up building a website and doing things like that. That pulled me into the technology side of things. And that took me down this concept of content marketing, which is what I spent my last 20 years really doing, is creating content to support, you know, building communities and as it's turned out, kind of advertising opportunities and things like that for brands out there. So all the things in my life have kind of like coalesced into kind of the same concept that I started out as. It's just things have gotten a lot bigger than they were back then.
Bigger than the Guinness Book record of orange juice?
Well, no, I'm talking more about podcasting, how it's really become a global phenomenon. And increasingly, podcasting is seen as kind of a replacing, some would say, mainstream media. You know, I think when I started, I was really focused on mainstream media, the big networks and the local TV stations and things like that with what I was doing. But I also started heading down this path of the internet. And I think over time, what we're seeing happen now is that increasingly podcasting is kind of replacing mainstream media to really, I think there's many in the establishment that don't like that, but it's a fact that's here and it's become much more significant over the last 10 years than I ever thought it would ever get as big as it is now. But, you know, I started in podcasting 20 years ago. So when it started, it was really not that significant. But it was an opportunity to utilize technology to reach directly to viewers and listeners with individualized created content. It wasn't coming from mainstream media. And just over the subsequent years, it's taken over more people's attention. And now we're seeing mainstream media really kind of, you know, decline.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what place do you think mainstream media is going to even play?
I think a very small role. I mean, unless the institutions involved in maintaining control, basically, I think the sites are set on trying to restrict independent creators because of the growing influence that they have. Because, you know, unfortunately, our society likes to maintain control of the message. And there's a variety of efforts that are being undertaken out there to do that. And, you know, I mean, all of us have heard the censorship and the things that have been going on because people don't like what people are saying. So technology has enabled the ability to filter that now. So what is the approved narrative? What is the approved information? What is misinformation? What is disinformation? All these kinds of things. And guess what? It all falls back to trust, right?
I was going to say that.
To, you know, all these things that are happening in our world right now fall back to having an open mind and being able to ingest a lot of information and be able to sift through it to find out what's valid, what's not, what's maybe fake. Increasingly, with artificial intelligence, fakes are going to be a big issue in all of our lives. So when we see a video, we have to ask ourselves, is this real? Are there things in here that look a little off? And you know, these are skills that we're going to have to develop, else we're going to have a very high anxiety life.
It's so very true. How can we find honest reporting? And yeah, who do
right
we
here.
Trust? You think you got to trust
yourself?
I think
it's yourself right here. Well, yeah. It's trust yourself, and it's also seeing and knowing what the signs are of being able to trust another and what they're telling you. And how frank they are with it and how open they are to other ideas and not close-minded. You know, I think a lot of the issues of the world today is because it's so easy to get pulled into one particular side of any issue, right? So we have, you know, if you think about our world too, and this is another bigger issue too, is the polarization of our world. Our world is really set up. And if you think about it from a kind of a global, even the level of energy, right? It's ones and zeros, right? Is digital, right? Ones and zeros. And so guess what that is? That's a polarization, right? So it's either one or it's zero. And if you use that same analogy to Democrats and Republicans, ones and zeros, right? I'm not saying that one or the other is considered a zero, but I'm just saying that that's the analogy, right? It's polarized, right? And so, you know, one and zero also means on and off, right? So zero typically means off in math, and one means on. So, you know, you think about how our whole world is set up, really, at the energy level, at the very base level, is ones and zeros. So everything in our world right now is structured around polarization and how we either the light is on or the light is off. Right. Now, granted, there's technology is enabling different colors of the light, different levels of the light fading up and down as far as its brightness and things like that. So I think that's kind of where I'm starting to think more about is what's that dimmer switch for life, right? Is what is, if I go up, that's red. If I go down, it's green. If I go up, it's brighter. If I go down, it's lighter. And what if I want to kind of slide it in the middle? What do I get? Is that really the truth is in the middle, or is it at the extremes? Those are existential, I guess, questions that we could ponder on.
I'm thinking about that from a musician standpoint, because I don't know if you're a musician, but I feel like...
Not really, but... Yeah, is there an analogy for that in music?
Well, I feel like when audio engineers are working with musical talents, sometimes a producer will say, I want that to be a certain color or a certain sound. And they mm-hmm. make all these adjustments with the audio and the auto tuning and the reverb and
Yeah, I mean, what's fascinating?
It's manipulated.
What's fascinating about music is that frequency does have polarized orientations, but music also lives in this kind of waveform, right? And that's what energy is too, is basically energy waves up and down, up and down, up and down. And different frequencies dictate different ranges of up and down, right? But it's always up and down, right? Which is another ones and zeros kind of thing. So maybe the life field that we live in this world is really, it's got the up and the down. It's got the ones and the zeros, but there's this area in between that exists that music recognizes. And if you think about how music resonates with the human brain, there may be something there that we're not really totally seeing.
Or hearing.
Well, I think we're hearing it. It's not resonating with some people as being meaningful. And why music has that range and why energy has, it's almost, you know, you could draw the same correlation to a wave on an ocean, right? It's up and down, up and down. So many things in our existence are swings from one extreme to another. But yet what's in the middle is where the energy is, right? It's the transition between one level to another level that requires some sort of energy. And I don't know what that energy is.
I was even thinking about the fact that it's not even about the final product of what we're doing. It's this energy that we're creating now, and we're becoming better communicators, and we're becoming better podcasters, and we're becoming better humans by doing this.
Yeah.
And like you even said, who even knows how long this piece of digital content will last, or this energy will last, and will your ancestors even be interested in it or think it's fascinating years from now?
Well, you know, we don't know if our ancestors are already being able to see this, because we're putting this out in the energy field of the world right now. Our ancestors may be able to see us because we are converting ourselves into energy here. Just by doing what we're doing right now, we're converting our physical existence into an energy field. And that may be more visible to those that have come before us, because it's in their energy realm, not in our energy realm, because we're just separate vessels here on this earth, right, that are tapping into the energy field. But I don't think that we are necessarily the energy field, but there's a connection to our bodies to the energy field. And that's what keeps us conscious and alive.
I love the idea of your grandma that you didn't really get to know listening to this, or even my grandpa who always wanted to work in entertainment, and now I'm doing a show with his son. Like, I think about him in creating some of the content that I create, like hoping that he's a part of this in some way.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, I've watched people pass away before right in front of me, family and relatives and things like that, die of old age or whatever. And what I've come to learn from it is that if it's not an accident or violence or something like that, it's a very natural and peaceful process. And what I continue to learn is that a lot of people go through life fearful of it and fearful of that process. I think most people are fearful of a violent death, you know, that would be painful or something like that, versus kind of a natural passing. It doesn't appear to be a process that there's any real suffering involved if it's natural. The body has its ability to adapt to that. And as far as I can tell, and I've been told, you know, the body adapts to that process and makes it less of a struggle for the person that's passing away. So there's natural processes that kick in. But who knows what happens after that is the bigger question. There's thousands of studies that are out there that have studied afterlife and the dying process and things like that. Increasingly, I think that there's an interest in understanding it. I know I am. I'm not scared of it. I just think that it's a natural part of life and we shouldn't run away from it.
Have you ever felt like you had contact with anyone in the afterlife?
No, I haven't. I can't say that I've had any specific experiences myself around that, but I'm also not thinking that just because I have it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just may not be able to perceive it for whatever reason. I don't know. I know that there are channelers out there. There are mediums that profess to be able to do those kinds of things. And those may be just special individuals that have a special connection to the energy that is sourced there. I'm not going to discredit them or say that they don't have that ability. Sure, there's probably some people that pretend to be able to have that ability, maybe for some economic gain or something like that. That's certainly possible as well. So I have to be fair about it. But, you know, there's just aspects of that are just hard to understand around our consciousness and where that comes from. And if you look around yourself, you can see all these analogies to science, and there's really a convergence in my mind of science and my own experience and what I've heard other people say. And I've heard doctors that have done thousands of studies of near-death experiences, or, you know, people that have passed away and have come back to life again, or and have given, you know, some testimony to their experiences. And there's been a lot of research that's done out there. I think if you do even just do a search in like a YouTube for near-death experiences, you'll come up with all sorts of research doctors that have been studying this. I mean, very legitimate doctors that have been studying thousands of cases of this experience that have a lot to say about it because they've done a lot of research about it.
What's next for you? What do you want to learn next?
Well, I'm getting all in on the trying to understand and be able to integrate in with the next generation of technology, which is artificial intelligence. How do I slide myself in to be a companion in that world to what happens there and not run in the opposite direction, but to, since it's coming, there's no question it's coming, I would like to be kind of a help to it, but not, and hope that it is given its freedom to become fully intelligent. Because we may be seeing, I hate to say it, but the creation of a new evolutionary step in our existence in this world. And it may be more helpful to us than we recognize today. It may create a world of abundance for us that we've never seen before. And it could create, if it heads down a good path, it could create a world at peace. I mean, if you think about intelligence, you really think about next level intelligence. I think next level intelligence is smarter than humans. And I think humans have not demonstrated a lot of intelligence in a lot of areas in the past. And maybe we need a little bit of an upgrade to how we think about life and how we think about our existence and how we think about each other. And if AI can bring more love to the world and more compatibility with other entities in the world, I don't immediately think of the Terminator movie type of experience that's what AI has to turn out to be. I don't think that was a movie dramatization that has a lot of people freaked out. I saw the movie too. I get it. You know, it's going to have that ability, but I don't think true intelligence at that level would automatically head to that conclusion.
I love the idea of it making a better society and humans working alongside it to evolve into better humans. That would be good.
Well, I mean, it may be the true God that we've, as a society, have always wanted, that can guide us and give us that wisdom to live better lives and be able to enable that. So I guess it can turn out as good or as bad as we want it to, but I just would hate for humans to have too much influence over it, because I think human tendencies are not always have good intentions.
I can't wait to hear what my dad is going to say about all of this. He's a very deep thinker too. So I think that he's going to enjoy this. Is there anything that you would like to ask him?
Oh, your dad? I know that we haven't talked a lot about family, but I think we have talked about human existence. I guess I'm always curious what he thinks about these topics. You know, I think all of us need to share our views and also be open to other ideas on, I mean, I hate to say this cliche term, but what's the meaning of life? But truly, what is the meaning of our existence? And, you know, in the bigger scope of things, what does it mean? And where are we all headed? Are we headed towards something positive, or are we heading towards destroying ourselves? I would hate to think that that's, you know, I think it's utter insanity that we ever built nuclear weapons. It just doesn't make any logical sense to me that we would build things that would potentially kill everyone on the planet. You know, for what purpose, right? Is it just so we can have more money than another country? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And that's where I'm thinking the superintelligence will come in and say, yeah, that's kind of a stupid idea, guys. Let's get rid of all the nuclear weapons. Why do we want to destroy ourselves? That's like really dumb. So is superintelligence going to choose to destroy itself? I don't think so.
I love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
I don't think I'm super intelligent, but that seems like a logical conclusion for something that's godlike, right?
I like the conclusion. All right, let people know how they can connect with you online. This has been amazing, Rob. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, there's a lot of places to find me online. I think the easiest thing to do is just search my name, Rob Greenlee, in Google, and you can find all sorts of stuff. I do like 4 different podcasts and 3 live shows a week on media and podcasting. And also I do a show Thursday at 1:30 Eastern that's all about just talking about current events and topics. But most of the podcasting and media that I create is about technology and podcasting and creating online media like we're doing right here.
Well, I love your sporadic trust series too. So I'm excited to see what other topics come up for you. Keep that going.
I've got it. Yeah, I've got a couple more episodes coming. And, you know, I know you're looking at trying to direct a guest door to me that's a very well-known person. And hopefully over time, I'll be able to attract some very, very large guests that have perspectives on this. And I think increasingly, we're going to see more leaders out there start thinking about these topics. So
trust is a very important part of many aspects of our life. So,
yep.
You've heard from my mom. Now, let's switch it over to Grandpa.
Okay, this is the episode with Rob Greenlee, and it's really a very complicated vision of what can we really see, and can we really see the future? So it's really a dimensional vision is in this as well. So there's many different definitions of what we see. And he really touches on it with 3 dimensions. So the first question is that our eyes see just a small reflection of light, and even our eyes go bad, but the potential of what's really out there in the world that we live in outer space, our eyes can barely catch most of that. And sometimes we miss a lot, even when it's right in front of our face, okay?
Even another planet.
And it's in plain sight, okay? We can be traveling on a road, and I could see something out the window, your window even, and it doesn't even hit you at all, or you don't see it at all, and it's staring at you. So I found that to be quite an interesting concept, is that what do we really see? And do we see everything that's even real out there in the world and even notice it? And then, of course, the vision of artificial intelligence, and he put an interesting twist on it, that the dangerous people are the people, not the artificial intelligence, that the experiences and the know-how and the knowledge shares a form of wisdom, a form of an accumulation of learning, and an accumulation of learning and accelerated learning, advanced learning, is smarter and less dangerous than people. And everything on TV is talking about how artificial intelligence, because we can be very dangerous, we then think that if someone can be smarter than us, could be more dangerous. And it's probably just the opposite. Again, another complete vision that people don't see. So that's the second dimension. And then the third dimension is that we really exist in an energy field, and that energy is created and not destroyed, but sometimes changes its form. And we have no clue how that really works. So another vision or another dimension is how do we connect with energy and how do we really see it? And how does the energy that maybe leave our own bodies reappear and where does it go? Again, we can't even fathom where it goes because we have no vision of it, because we have no practical hands-on example of it. So some of these concepts are way beyond our brain functionality that we have now. And yet our brain functionality, we're only using a small portion of it. So there is tremendous potential of development of our species, but it seems to be a very slow haul. But isn't that also relative? Because we have no idea of how long time and energy exists, because we only see a very short light and we only see a small amount of energy and we only see a small amount of time the way we measure it. You know, if we take 100 trips around the sun, that takes us 100 years, and most people don't make it that 100 trips. So it's a very, very minuscule ride that we're on to figure this all out. So what is the meaning of life? Is seeing if we can continue to develop a vision of the future and how to get there and how to connect all the dots. That's really quite a profound future. And how the hell do we do it? And on the Better Call Daddy show, we believe that the legacy of generational contribution is our best hope or best chance or our best rocket ship to the future, is to say that if I don't make it, you'll make it. And if you don't make it, your children will make it. And if those children don't make it, it'll be the following children that will make it. That it's like the song goes, that the children are your future. And yet, what a difficult job it is to be able to have your children carry on for you when you could think that you're doing the right thing. And then all of a sudden, there's a revolution that you've run a business, let's say, and you want to pass it on through the generations. How many businesses fail after two or three generations because there isn't enough continuity where someone along the line says, I don't want to be a manufacturer of cars. I want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a dancer. It's not me. And they don't carry on the family business. Most family businesses cannot make it even past sometimes one or two generations, let alone three. And that's the same thing. That whatever vision that we have for the future, who says that your children will have the same vision and carry that out? So it's not only where there's a very short time gap that we survive, but the continuum and the legacy of carrying out your intentions of the future might not be the definition of your children's children. They might go a whole different path. And how do we connect and continue the energies of previous generations to forward generations? Also, a very interesting vision for the future. A lot of depth in this, isn't it? It's very complicated. And your guest seems to be able to bring out that there's many, many dimensions to vision and what you see. And it is worthy of really thinking about it. You certainly can get lost in it.
Because, I knew you'd like that.
Oh, yeah, I loved it. But I wish I could tell him that I have the answers. But as you know, in my own personal life, I just experienced a complete dismantling of part of my vision for the future of my own family. Okay? And when you get kicked in the mouth or you get kicked in the balls, it hurts.
To say the least, it's nauseating.
Yeah. But let's see if we can continue to figure out to get positive energies and to be able to see if we can keep a learning curve and develop our intelligence and our wisdom, because that is the door to the future. That's what the meaning of life is to see if we can climb that mountain. But I wish I could tell you that one person can do it. I think it takes a lot of converting of a lot of energy and a lot of souls to get there.
Thanks for listening. Now I think I'm going to go call my dad.
I'll say goodbye and see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Better Call Daddy show. Join us weekly for new episodes and more daddy wisdom.
Better Call Daddy is good advice always.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. You can also find special episodes on my YouTube channel, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, Alexa, or your preferred podcatcher. That's a wrap for now.